Welcome back to episode 14 of the Verde Podcast. Every week we talk to local business leaders and entrepreneurs to understand the real story that often does not make it to the spotlight, but is how the city continues to grow and create jobs. Today we have Natalie Bauer-Luce, who is the founder of Bauer-Luce & Associates, a communications and public affairs strategy firm. I've known Natalie. We've been friends for a long time and used to be co-soccer colleagues. I'm not sure how you'd say that, but for many years we
teammates,
had...
Teammates, perhaps?
Teammates would probably be the better way to go. But we were a ragtag group of soccer players for many years in our 20s and early 30s and haven't connected until recently. So it's been cool. So welcome, Natalie.
Thank you.
I just learned how to say your pronounce your new married name, which I also had to look up. It's been so long since we've been hanging out.
Yep. I've rebranded.
You rebranded. yes. And so tell me a little bit about how and why you started your business.
Sure.
What gave you the idea? What motivated you to take it from an idea to an actual business?
Sure.
And a little bit about the journey.
Well, so I run essentially a consultancy, and it's something that I have wanted to do for a long time and sort of been in the back of my head. I remember I was at my brother's wedding of all places, and I was a bridesmaid, and one of the other bridesmaids and I were talking over dinner. We didn't know each other very well, and she was asking about my background in government and politics and having worked in journalism, and she said, well, what do you really want to do? And it was like being in a job interview at a wedding. And I just sort of sat there and blurted out, well, I want to have my own firm someday. And so here I am.
What year was that? Do you remember that?
That would have been like 2007, I think. I'd have to go back. So a while ago, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been at my career 15 plus years now and found myself in a situation last year where I had some opportunities sort of fall in my lap and decided to just give it a go and see where things net out. I have a good support system in my husband and my family, and I have a pretty good network that has enabled me to, again, have sort of a good base foundation of clients and to just kind of give it a try and see what happens. And so far, so good.
So you started was it your first job? What was your first job? I know you were tell me about the path that led you there professionally.
Sure.
Because I think that's a very interesting part
so
of your story.
So when I talk about my career, I kind of look at it from, or try to explain it, that it was, I have sort of a comprehensive set of experiences across the spectrum when it comes to, we'll call it communications. So I got my start, I went to Medill at Northwestern University, the journalism school there. And had a handful of opportunities in various mediums. So I did primarily newspaper reporting, both here in the city, in the suburbs, did some work with the Daily Herald, worked out in Olympia, Washington, covering government politics in the state capital there, and to, it's now called content marketing, working for a small firm here in town, using my journalism skills to kind of tell stories. And that's kind of the core kind of foundation of my career, taking these skills I learned in journalism school and as a young journalist and learning how to talk to people and interview them and kind of pull information out of them to put stories together, whether it's for a newspaper or for a TV station or for clients or for public officials. So after working in content marketing, I ran their sort of nonprofit arm working with advocacy organizations, again, helping to tell their stories for, you know, call them business purposes, whether it was fundraising, you know, membership, recruitment, partnerships, things like that. I learned that I liked that sort of strategy component of it and the advocacy component of it. Really liked being in that capacity versus as a journalist where you're reporting on the story versus having a voice in the issue. So that's what led me to get into public affairs work, both working at I was at a big PR firm for a handful of years working with corporate entities for various advocacy issues, net neutrality among them, which has been an interesting debate that has since continued. So like it's been a decade of watching that issue evolve, both being involved in it and from the sidelines. And then I got the opportunity to to really get into the mix of it in government and politics, I had an opportunity to join Lisa Madigan's office, the Illinois Attorney General, starting off as her deputy press secretary, and later signed on to serve as her communications director. Did some campaign work in between there. But so that was the bulk of it, kind of, again, runs the gamut, both from journalism into politics. And then I decided after I was with the Attorney General's office for almost 7 years, on and off, decided for a number of reasons, personal and professional, that it was time to move on. And
it's probably pretty stressful there, huh?
It was, but it's like a sickness when
yeah.
There's a certain type of personality, I think, that is attracted to the intensity and the sort of 24/7-ness of it. And, you know, you start off in journalism, you're in newsrooms, you are on deadline, and there's an adrenaline that you get from that, and that's hard to give up. So it wasn't that. It was, it just was after, you know, a number of years, you're ready for a new challenge, really.
Sure.
So I decided to take a leap back into the private sector and into the startup scene here in Chicago. It's something I've always had an interest in, and something I've wanted to be a supporter of. I'm, you know, a native Chicagoan. I'm from the suburbs, but I think everybody...
We'll give it to you. We'll allow you to have that.
I've lived here in the city for over a decade, but and I'm a huge... You know, I love this city, and I think anything that we can do to be boosters for it will only benefit the cause. And so having a role and an opportunity in the startup scene was something that was really appealing. And so I went to work at Uptake Technologies, where I was their first strategic communications pro, kind of signed on to kind of tell their early story and build and scale the team there. So that's what I was doing. And then last summer, again, had some opportunities to do some independent kind of client work and decided to take the leap and see where we go. You surround yourself with entrepreneurs and technologists at a company like Uptake, and you can sort of get inspired to want to try your own hand at something.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of talking.
No, that's all right. I've got 50 follow-up questions. I've been taking notes.
Oh, God. Okay.
But I think one thing that you said that really I found interesting is Chicago is... I think a lot of people don't know the story, the true story of Chicago, and I definitely don't. But one thing that I learned, 10 or 15 years ago, it was an environmental class I was taking in grad school, and they were talking about the canals.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize canals predated the rails. I assumed, like, Chicago was built on the rail system, but it wasn't. It was a very small, like, village.
Mm-hmm.
And they had these advocates for this small village that really fought to bring the canals. Milwaukee and St. Louis were much bigger cities, and they dredged these canals. And, you know, these were, like, early leadership in Chicago. And one of the things that So I like Brad Keywell a lot from Uptake. I don't know him personally very well, mm-hmm. other than meeting him a few times, but he's one of those ones that built a big business in Chicago and stayed.
Right.
You know, some people take off and go to the West Coast or somewhere else, and, you know, love him or not, like, he's here helping to build the city, and that's something the city needs. I love that anecdote.
Yeah, it's a good example. You look at the sort of history of sort of business and civic leaders in the city, and you need that. That's a critical component of a successful, you know, metro area, if you will. And that's where the original, you know, boosters came from, Windy City, because the city, you know, leaders were talking it up so much. But yeah, Brad is an incredible supporter of the city. And to your point, very easily, you know, after his and Eric Lefkofsky's early business successes, could have very easily picked up and moved to the coast. And you see that pattern is far too prevalent. I think you're starting to see some of that turn.
Yeah.
For any number of reasons, the sort of demographic issues or dynamics of what it's like to live on the coast. It's, you know, extremely excessively expensive. You know, you look at what's going on in Silicon Valley, and it's really hard to make a living and have a life there.
You can't have like a call center there. You can't, every employee is very expensive and the cost of living is very high. And
mm-hmm.
Chicago mm-hmm. I think it's the lowest cost of living of any major metro city in the U.S.
I don't know. I mean, it's definitely a talking point for us in terms of livability. And you see that going on right now with the bid for the Amazon headquarters and, you know, the city can stand out because it has an incredible talent base. You've got the university system that's feeding incredible talent. You just have to give them a reason, those graduates, to stay here.
Right.
And companies like Uptake and others are beginning to do that. So.
Yeah. So, 7 years with the Attorney General, right? So that's the longest stint you had in your career to date.
Yeah. It's like a lifetime in politics. When I tell people that, they sort of, their jaw drops a little bit. So,
and that's a big transition to go from like public sector to this private, like super, I mean, was Uptake the fastest growing startup?
Yeah.
Ever?
Yes.
Did it? Okay. Groupon was the fastest before that.
I think so, yeah.
And so, and those are both, Brad Keywell has his hands all over both of them.
Yeah.
So he likes fast-paced activities.
They don't waste much time. yeah, so to some people, if you look at it on paper, it looks like a big shift or very different experiences because you assume in, you know, government or the public sector, things move very slowly, government worker or whatever. That did not apply to my office, to the Attorney General. And if you look at the things we accomplished during my time there, just over the course of her administration, taken on any number of huge fights with massive industries, the big banks, the tech sector in terms of data security and data privacy, which is obviously something we're all contending with now. I could go on, but it was I was working for the longest time in an incredibly intense, fast-paced environment, and my concern was, when I was looking for the right opportunity to move on to after the AG's office, was where can I continue to find that satisfaction in working on important issues, working at a senior level and really kind of continuing on that intensity spectrum. Because if you're not challenged, I mean, what's the point?
Yeah.
At least that's my perspective. Yeah. I'm not the type of person that's ever been able to sort of clock in, clock out, turn it on, turn it off. Much to my husband's chagrin, but, so for me, I needed to find something that was equally challenging and compelling. I had things going on in my personal life that also needed, you know, prioritization.
So maybe is that what held you back from starting your own firm at that point? Was that,
you know, a couple people told me to go and do it, and then I called them later, and I was like, I just wanted you to know I finally took your advice several years later. I felt like I needed to kind of have that sort of in-house experience. So working in-house in the Attorney General's office is one thing, but that's a unique vantage point, public sector, leading a team, whatever. I wanted that private sector experience as well as a senior leader building, growing, and leading a team, just to have that perspective to provide to my own clients.
Yeah.
And I got so much out of that experience, learned a ton. It was an incredibly challenging role, but wouldn't turn it down, you know, wouldn't change anything to go back on that because it's made me smarter and you know, kind of, again, more versatile. Not only do I know the public sector and the political arena, I also now know, you know, one of the fastest growing industries in the city, and how do you help those types of companies navigate regulatory waters? How do you help them figure out how to get their story out early on, et cetera? So it's an area that I was interested in, and now I'm able to flip the coin a little bit and provide counsel based on my own personal experience in a legitimate way that clients, I think, appreciate.
So, Bauer Luce, how long has it been around?
I started as a consultant back in August of 2017.
Am I mispronouncing Luce again? It's Luce, right? Luce?
No, I'm just laughing at you because you are so hesitant to say it.
I'm scared. I'm scared to make a mistake in front of a communication specialist. I cannot make this mistake. So.
We'll give you some coaching, some media training.
Yeah. I'm really bad with names in general. Like, my wife and I always joke, like, when I introduce her to someone, if I don't say their name, she knows to jump right
in. That's a good rule.
Yeah. I'm pretty bad about that stuff. What year did it start? I'm sorry.
So I started last, like, late summer, early fall.
Okay. So it's been not quite a year yet.
Not quite a year.
You're fresh.
Yes, I'm fresh.
So any other employees right now, or is it just you?
No, it's just me, and I do some kind of partnering with other firms, mm-hmm. And then I'm brought on as a subcontractor in some places, and then just have my own set of clients as well.
So really, like, that's the part that I'm going to ask you a million questions about, because mm-hmm. the leap from just you to employees is, mm-hmm. like, a huge... And I remember, I think I was 4 years before I hired anybody yeah. else, and I was always thinking about it, like, oh, maybe I'm... lacking in sales. So if I hired a salesperson and they could run with this, I would just take off. And
yeah.
Like, so do you have a vision of like when the first hire would be and like the first direct employee? Because that's a big, you know, contractors are one thing, but.
Right. Right. No, where you're staying up at night and worrying yeah. about if you're going to be able to pay them. Yeah.
Well, and replicating right your work, right? Like probably right. billing out for the same communicate. Like that's probably like your workload at some point will get so much that you're right. either turning away clients, which I think we've already talked about that you've had to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. When I first started wanted to do this or thought it was the way I was going to go, I talked to a lot of people that had been there, done that, and are doing so very successfully now. And one of the most interesting pieces of advice that has definitely stuck with me is say no from time to time. I've only had to do that a couple times this far. It is incredibly hard to do though, because it's, you know, you have to make smart choices early on. And if you want to build out, you know, a name for yourself, you've got to make sure that you're able to deliver on things and that they're the right things. But it also that the counselor who had given me this advice was, it was, there's sort of a psychological effect to it as well in terms of say no, you're hard to get sort of thing. I find that incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
Well, for but sure. I have done so a couple of times, not because I'm playing hard to get, but because yeah. you just want to make sure that you're the right person for the job and can fulfill the mandate.
What's funny is when you say no and people don't like accept that as like the appropriate response.
Right.
Like we do a lot of work with property manager groups, and we're really good on apartment managers or commercial side. So I met last week with someone who does condo building boards, which we've actually worked a lot with condo boards, but this particular, the way they wanted it, they wanted to work us like an electrical contractor that would come out and bid projects based on what they spec'd out, but that's not our strength. Like we right. need to get in early and right. shape the conversation or there's really no value.
Yep.
So this morning I emailed him and said, hey, thanks for the opportunity. Here's a little bit about a couple programs that might work for you. I don't think we're a really good vendor for you, but you know, good luck and let me know if I can help. I'll be glad to have a coffee whenever you want. You buy me a cup of coffee and I'll help give you some advice or thoughts on projects that you're looking at. And he said, no, we just have to find the right project to work on together. And I was not the right back. Actually, no, like we're just not a good fit. Like we're not a good partnership, right?
Yeah.
And so it is hard to... It's hard to say it, and then it's hard to, like, back it up, yeah. you know? And I guess it's not a bad problem, and if you say no, and someone says, well, I would be willing to double the budget to make this work, then right. that opens up a conversation,
that might
right?
change the dynamic, right?
Sure.
I had to say no early on, which was really hard, but it was a political candidate who wanted me to sort of sign on. And I just wasn't ready to. So I have sort of three sort of service offerings or three sort of components to my portfolio, my client portfolio. I work with tech companies and startups. Mm-hmm. I work with sort of public affairs and crisis clients. And then I do some political work. The political work tends to be, you know, the most exciting, but it is the most time consuming and just... It's hard to kind of keep things balanced. And so early on, I did not want to take on too much political work because I wanted to build that kind of diversified base and was concerned that it would just suck the life out of me. And so I said no to this particular individual. And they kept coming back and they ended up not even running eventually. So it worked out well for both of us, but it was really hard to do.
And are your startups or your tech startups, are they typically funded like backed by angel or venture capital? Or?
Yeah. Yeah. Because you can't sign on with a company that's, you know, at the earliest stages. A couple reasons. They don't have the funding that they need, but they're also not ready to engage in the type of services that I offer. And you have to figure out the right timing. Brad Keywall is a unique kind of executive or business leader in this thinking. Like, he understands the value of PR. And so I signed on an uptake pretty early for what the company was at the time. But it ended up I think, working out to the company's benefit in terms of being able to kind of craft that early narrative and really put the company on the map, not only in Chicago, but nationally and then even internationally, recognition from the World Economic Forum. But that's a rare situation. So you have to work with established companies that, you know, have the resources, but they also have the need for the services. They need to have their story together or have somebody be ready to tell their story. And then they sign on somebody like myself who helps them figure out, okay, here are your assets. Here's how to talk about them. And here's where to talk about them in order to engage the stakeholders that you really need to reach in terms of a customer base, partners, funders, whatever.
Well, definitely most startups that are well known are consumer facing products, right? Mm-hmm. Or apps. Like people know those, but it's hard. Uptick is unique that they're a commercial, you know,
B2B.
Yeah. But mm-hmm. you've heard of them, right? You've heard of them because of the PR work. So, and that often comes with, so I'm not, kind of a venture backed startup kind of person. Like early on kind of recognized that wasn't really who I was. But the interesting thing is I hear you talk, I could see the similarities between campaigns and startups that are venture backed because they're like throw a lot of money, a big push. And then there's like a deadline, right? Like you've got to get whatever you've got to get done by a year and a half or you're gone.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So I was saying earlier that, you know, when I did tell people, some folks that I was leaving the AG's office to go work in the tech sector for a B2B company, they're like, wow, that's a huge change. Yes, in terms of content, like the Internet of Things, that's not exactly, you know, consumer protection and, you know, legal issues. But with my journalism background, you're comfortable with taking complex things like the Internet of Things or these political issues and policy issues with the AG's office, breaking them down and piecing them back together in a narrative that makes sense for the audience that you need to reach. That's the job in essence. Yeah. And then you're working for a very high-profile individual, i.e. a politician, and you're, you know, working at a very intense level. So there are a lot of similarities. The content was different, and that was one of the interesting challenges for me was kind of learning this new space and really looking at where we're going in the economy and the future of labor and where things are going with machine learning and artificial intelligence and all of the implications, again, also with the data security and privacy issues that we're contending with now. Those are going to be the big questions and debates of our generation, I think, you know, on the economic side, on the labor side of things. And when you're a public affairs professional looking at how do regulatory entities deal with the advancements brought forth by technology, that's really interesting stuff, and I want to be a part of that. So that was the thinking into going down this path.
So back to the idea of when the next hire is or the first hire. Is there a client that you've looked at yet that if they called you tomorrow and said, oh, we're ready to hire you, you know, we need you like to start like next week, that you would have to pull the trigger and hire someone?
No, but for good reason. So there is a proposal out there right now that it's a massive job. And when I was originally included in the bid list or the list of folks that they're reaching out to for this RFP, I was like, A, super complimented to be on the list because the competitors were some of the biggest brand names that you know and other folks that work in this industry that have their own, you know, named shop, people who I look up to. So that's awesome. A couple months into doing this, I took that as really good validation. But the scope of the project and the engagement was massive and not something I could take on my own. And so I built out a strategic partnership to go at this with a couple other folks in the industry. So if that were to come to the fore tomorrow, I'm set. But that's a way to get around that equation right now. Because for me, it's... I'm comfortable with where I'm at right now. And, you know, I definitely think through some of those growth questions. But I also see a way right now to continue in this capacity and continue to grow and build without having to take on that extra challenge.
Yeah.
So
I have a friend in Minneapolis that runs she does grant writing for nonprofits mostly, but a lot of different things. And we talk a lot about hiring people because she's so overworked. Mm-hmm. And she's always saying no to work. And then, you know, we talk, she just kind of asked my advice for, we were just talking about, when do you hire someone and manage them? And she's tried it and it just never works out.
Right.
So on a similar note, if I could do anything like in the world and I was like infinitely, you know, super rich and didn't have to work anymore, I would just do what I'm doing, but not have any employees. Mm-hmm. Like I would go.
I remember when we sat down, you said that to me. It stuck with me. Like, oh.
Because, okay. I mean, it's, I love working with, you know, we've got bright, talented people. And I think of them in many ways like, you know, like my closest friends and family. But
right.
It just, it complicates your life to have to, you have to communicate, right? Like the communication alone is exhausting. And
right.
So I'm jealous of the stage you're in. And I would not say to rush it for sure.
I'm not. I don't think there's a need to. I think that I tend to be the type of person that likes to really just kind of survey the landscape before I make big decisions versus somebody who kind of plunges head first. And there's pros and cons to either approach. This is just my personality and how I've always done things. And so I'm very comfortable with where I'm at right now. I'm really enjoying it. There are a number of different avenues that this opportunity will could take me down. Yeah. And I'm just really trying to be mindful of all of those. You know, I still get calls from recruiters about full-time jobs. And I've always said, like, it would have to take one heck of a full-time job for me to go back to what I would call a, quote, real job. Yeah. But because I'm enjoying this. And it has opened up a whole host of new opportunities, which that's pretty awesome to be able to say. So, but yeah. No, I'm not in a rush to add overhead.
So what are your favorite parts about kind of being independent and running your own shop?
I think this is probably something you hear pretty often from people. It's the flexibility. And, you know, people say like, oh, you don't have a boss. And that's not true because your clients are your bosses,
for
sure. Et cetera. Everybody has a boss really at the end of the day. But
sometimes multiple bosses.
But I have multiple bosses. Yeah. So, and that's sometimes difficult to juggle in terms of clients that, you know, have their own priorities and agendas and how do you juggle those. But I enjoy the flexibility of being able to juggle the various things and just kind of go at my own pace. Mm-hmm. I'm working just as intensely as I was before, but I'm able to kind of set my own kind of agenda and schedule that works for me in the way that I work best. So that's what I enjoy.
Is there a least favorite part in the first, you know, you're in their first year, but is there something that's like the worst part of it? Like the sending invoices?
Paperwork sucks, yeah. But it's also like, you're going to get paid if you do this. So there is a motivation to it. And my concern was always prior to having gone and done this and started my own thing was, am I going to be motivated to get up in the morning and work, or am I just going to like roll out of bed and like, you know, throw on the coffee and like hang out and watch some daytime soaps or something? I've never watched soaps, but
There's so much TV
but you
now,
never
like,
know. Yeah. Just, right.
You could be lost in Netflix for a couple of years.
But it's amazing the motivation you find once you're it.
Yeah.
So I've never had that issue, which is nice, but
it's hard to explain that motivation too. Cause if it's not money motivated, which, you know, when you run a business, it's about money, but I find it's often not like, it's not,
there is just for me, no, it's sure it's money, but like it's this inner core, this inner voice that is like just keeping pushing at me. And it's what has led us throughout our career. It's guided me, that sort of, that invisible force that just keeps you one, it's drive, right? And but that drive is stronger now that it's on my own and it's up to me. So the other thing I would say is, you know, it does get a little lonely from time to time. So, I mean, I'm in a, you know, people business, so I just try to make sure that I have a good balance of sort of events and, you know, one-on-one face-to-face meetings every week. Try to kind of balance my schedule with, okay, here's the day where I'm going to stay home and just churn as much stuff out as I need to, and then kind of build in the middle of the week where I'm out and about and shaking hands and passing out business cards. So
kissing babies.
Me and babies.
My
own baby would be jealous. So. Yeah.
I think, unfortunately, like even when you do add employees, I think that loneliness kind of stays.
I'm sure, because you're, I mean, it's on your shoulders, and there's always that, it's that mentality that you're talking about, like, until you go and do this, it's like having kids, until you go and do this yourself, you don't, like, you can understand and imagine what it's like, but until you go and do it, you don't totally get it.
Yeah.
And when everything is sort of riding on your shoulders, that's hard for other people to relate to unless you've done it yourself.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there's a, you know, that there's a, my next door neighbor runs a business, and he'll say to me, like, oh, like, if you don't know what it's like to try to hit payroll, like, you know, and that's kind of a bad example, but it's just everything. Like, if you don't know, like, there's a burden, and there's a,
right,
you know. So the last question I always like to ask people is about sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is just because this is kind of where my passion
totally
kind of pushes it within my own company. And it doesn't, there's no right or wrong answer. Like, I'm very just curious, like, where do you see prior, sustainability playing out in your personal venture?
Sure. Well, let me go back to Uptake for a quick minute. That was one of the appeals of going to work for that company in particular, where you look at the impact of technology and how it's going to play in creating efficiency that will ultimately benefit, you know, the globe, and the impact on climate change and all sorts of stuff like that. There was a social responsibility aspect that underlied the ultimate business goal. So it's something that has always been a value for me. Sometimes I'm not as great at living it out personally. But so in terms of sustainability, you know, I have a small footprint, if you will, but, you know, it's not an explicit stated sort of mission.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that I do seek out clients that, that are, you know, just align with my political and sort of policy values. And so I do have a number of advocacy organizations that I work with, or companies that, as part of their sort of sustainability, you know, or their mission, try to kind of impact the world in that way.
Do you think that brands like Uptake, I mean, this sounds like a dumb question, it might seem obvious, but I mean, you're a strategist, obviously, communication strategist. So does the value when they're doing socially good really matter? And does it really help? Or, like, if that company was, you know, some reason had an economic role of taking garbage and throwing it in the ocean, and they made millions of dollars and billions of dollars, so, like, does that really matter to a company's brand? Or is it a little bit of, like, greenwashing?
Well, I explicitly stayed away from the term CSR, corporate social responsibility. And I think you're going to see that more and more. Working at Uptake, working with leaders like Brad, he understood, I think almost intuitively, that to build a company in this era, you have to be mindful of purpose-driven work, and you attract talent that is aligned with that. And so early on, you know, it was well before the company was even 2 years old, we helped build up and start the civic and philanthropic arm of Uptake, uptake.org, kind of scoped out what this would look like and brought on a really impressive guy to lead the division. It's a not even 2 year old startup, and they have a, you know, an entity dedicated to basically working with nonprofits to help them harness their data to fulfill their mission. Mm-hmm. Whatever, it aligned with Uptake's mission, and, you know, offered their services for the nonprofit sector. Have you heard of a company that's done that? I mean, you could look at, like, the Salesforces of the world that are very sort of civically and philanthropically minded. I think you're just going to continue to see more and more of that, because as, you know, the workforce continues to change and evolve, you know, everybody likes to malign millennials, but a lot of folks in that generation say this is a part of why they, you know, where they will go to work. And so either companies get with that or they don't.
So you think that's more about employee retention than maybe people purchasing
doing the right
products?
Thing?
Yeah. No, then, like, you know, if there's Uptake in some other company.
Well, I think it depends on the business.
Yeah.
If you're a consumer-facing company, that has an impact on purchase decisions, right? In the case of Uptake, I think it was Brad wanted to do it. He's a civically minded guy anyway, and he's the founder of Chicago Ideas. He spends a lot of time on, you know, mission oriented stuff. But it also certainly is something that attracted people who wanted to be associated with that type of a service offering.
Well, we don't have a ton more time. We could talk for hours, but my next question would have been for you. Why don't campaigns then need that same kind of like socially focused thrust to attract talent and engage their you know, clients, so to speak, which would be the voters? And I guess on one side, the left of the political spectrum does, but it doesn't seem something. Why doesn't that hold true in that field?
What do you mean?
Like in a campaign, does a campaign itself need to be like socially minded to attract talents the same way? Like would the Attorney General in her second campaign create like a .org version that does social good, you know?
I think it's the nonprofit sector is, you know, there's all sorts of rules and regulations that advise how groups and entities can act, and political organizations are, you know, an explicit type. So I think it's sort of apples and oranges.
This might be the part where I learn to edit out dumb questions that I ask, and so I might I might go back and take that one out. So.
Can you pronounce my last name?
Luce.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, Natalie, pleasure to sit down, and I look forward to catching up in a couple years. I don't believe you. I think you'll have like 50 employees in a few years. So.
Oh, well, mark those words. We'll see. Should we put money on it?
Yeah, we'll put a beer on it. So
I'm down.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks, Jamie.
All right, good seeing you, Natalie.